Part 2. We're joined by Kamal Mu, entertainment lawyer and author of the book, The Straightforward Guide to the Music Biz. An entertainment lawyer breaks down the industry. Kamal represents a variety of musicians and labels, including megastar Janet Jackson. Are you a creative or entrepreneur who's sick of all the red tape? Sick of gatekeepers and powerful digital media platforms that cater to celebrities and people with deep pockets? I mean, you got talent, you got skills, but you can't seem to break through. It's time to destroy.
Destroy.
The podcast helping entrepreneurs and creators conquer the barriers between them and the people. What's up, everyone? I'm your host, Christopher Grant Sr. Thank you so much for listening to Destroy. Now, I know there are a million things you could be doing right now, but you took time out of your busy day to listen to me. So sit back, relax, and open your ears and enjoy the Uneven Playing Field series.
Destroy Digital Media Platforms, the new book by Christopher Grant Sr., an insightful, eye-opening quick read that tells you why your content everywhere gets you nowhere and how to rise above the digital media clutter. Visit destroybook.com.
How does BMI and ASCAP differ from the Harry Fox Agency and Sound Exchange?
Oh, okay. So Harry Fox and Sound Exchange are not related to ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC at all. They're completely different. They do a completely different thing. So ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC, as I mentioned, collect public performance royalties for compositions, like musical compositions. Mm-hmm. That's all they do. Now, Sound Exchange is very different. They collect royalties from digital streaming of sound recordings, not composition, sound recordings. So whenever something is broadcast on Pandora or internet radio, if it's non-interactive stream, meaning it's like a radio station, you can't choose what comes next. Like Spotify, it's interactive because you can choose it. So Sound Exchange doesn't cover Spotify.
Right.
Sound Exchange will cover that form of income for the sound recordings. And then Harry Fox is also a different entity. Basically, they grant what's called mechanical licenses to do like cover songs, for example. So let's say I want to record Thriller by Michael Jackson. I want to do my own version and put it out there. I just go to Harry Fox and I get a license, and I can record my own version and put it out there for sale as long as I pay Harry Fox the mechanical royalty that's owed. And like I said, these are very different organizations that do very different things. So in the book, I try to go into this and like the difference between these streams of income.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but artists are paid on these digital media platforms based on their share of total streams. Now, looking from the outside in, it would seem like this type of business model isn't sustainable, as more and more artists are flocking to these platforms, the payouts are getting smaller and smaller.
Well, I think that we'll see, I guess, because like you said, I mean, it's based on percentages. However, the percentages usually translate to, you know, pennies. Like, for example, if you stream a track on Spotify, the songwriter is going to get paid like 0.0006 cents for in mechanical royalties. And then also Spotify also does have PRO licenses from ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC, because it's like they're broadcasting music as well. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get a little bit on that side too, about the same amount. So it's like fractions of a penny that they're paying out to songwriters, for example. And then they're paying out to the labels, and then the labels will in turn pay the artists. But yeah, it's not a ton of money. And that's why I say it's a great platform, obviously, to get your stuff out there. But, you know, it's very, unless you're like a Drake or somebody, you're not going to get rich off of Spotify streams, right?
Right.
You know, the average artist who's doing well, you know, it will make some money, but not like a ton of money. And that's why I'm saying, like, I think it's a great way to promote yourself. So at least, you know, hopefully you'll get interest going so that people will come to your show, and then you'll make some better money on your shows. Because if you have enough popularity there, people will pay to pay for a decent amount of money to come see your show, pay for a ticket, because you can't bootleg that, right? People do love live performances. Of course, with everything going on right now, that's hard to do, but I think obviously it'll come back eventually. And that's the thing. I think musicians really will make their money from touring, merchandise, other deals and stuff too. So I think it's a great outlet in that sense, where it gives everybody the opportunity to get their stuff out there. But yeah, it's not going to be the big money maker.
I try to share with my audience how top heavy the music industry is. The top 1% is making 77% of the profit in the industry. Many of my listeners are independent and underrepresented artists. So at what point in their careers should they set aside money to pay for legal representation?
I always tell people, if you're offered any kind of contract that concerns the rights to your music, you should definitely consult with an attorney. Mm-hmm. I work with a lot of independent artists. You know, like you said, I represent Janet Jackson, but I also work with a ton of independent artists who are just starting out. And I keep my fees, you know, relatively, you know, affordable. I mean, I understand how it is. I used to work with a lot of indie bands, and I know how it is. You have to be smart with your budget. So I try and make quote some fair prices where I still get paid what I think is fair, but then they get what they need. And the other thing too, is I say, you have to really plan for success. I mean, if you're spending all this money on recording and equipment and all this other stuff, I mean, that's great, but spend a little bit of money to make sure your music is protected legally speaking. I can't tell you how many times people have come to me after the fact where they made a bad deal or signed a bad deal. And all I could do is tell them, is like, well, you're kind of stuck now. There's really not much I can do for you. You've already signed this. And unless you want to sue them, I mean, that's, and I don't do litigation. So it's just one of those things that, like, if you're going to take it seriously, like a business, if you plan to try and make your music into a real business, then you need to spend a little bit of money on legal to make sure you're covered. Because, you know, it makes no sense to me to spend like $10,000, $20,000 recording an album, but then spend no money on contracts. So I think people need to readjust their thinking sometime to say, no, that's important.
I'm sitting here thinking, and it's like as if artists didn't have enough obstacles in their way to being profitable and successful. Now they have to deal with the pandemic, COVID-19. What are some things that artists can do to kind of get through these times and stay on top of things to keep their careers moving forward?
Most of my clients are basically doing a lot of recording right now, a lot of writing, kind of planning their next steps. I think that right now, the way things are going, it looks like we might start to get back to normal next year or maybe later this year. So I think they're trying to, you know, figure out, okay, well, if I put out this album at this time, I can do a tour to back it up. Because usually when you do a tour, you want to have something to promote, right? So usually a tour lines up with an album. So I have clients who are looking to do that. So now they're just sort of in planning mode and trying to get albums done, get tracks done. It's funny because I thought that things would slow down during the pandemic, but honestly, things really accelerated for me in terms of work. And I think it's because people are like, well, I'm home now. I might as well get all this stuff taken care of, get the paperwork done, get these contracts done. I've had some artists who are signing deals, and I think the business side is getting done now, because before, I think when people were just living life, I think a lot of artists, you know, they don't really like to think about this stuff. So they were out there recording and partying and doing stuff and socializing, and, you know, trying to trace them down and get a contract signed is not always easiest to do. Right, but now everybody's just sort of home and they're kind of catching up on this stuff. So it's been surprising on my end in that sense.
You know, in light of the pandemic, I'm seeing several artists be very creative. They're doing these house concerts. They're doing them on Facebook Live, on Instagram, and on YouTube. Is there anything that they need to be concerned with legally when hosting these house concerts?
Well, I mean, I guess the idea is if you're going to be playing music on Instagram, hopefully it won't get, let's say you record it and put it up there, it won't get dinged because it's like it's a rights violation or something. But if you're writing the music and, you know, you're your own music publisher and you own the rights, then that's not really an issue. Usually, I think it's a good way to try and get some exposure, get your music out there. I think it's definitely whatever helps you get in front of the audience right now is really important, because that's a tricky thing, is trying to keep people engaged during this time. Although I know that the Spotify streaming numbers are way up right now, as is like all the, you know, Netflix and all those things. So I think people are really in the mood to consume content. I actually had a conversation the other day with this guy who's in the music business, and he was saying how lately, like, the top tracks have been longer in length. Because usually, you know, tracks have gotten shorter. It's like songs are like 2 minutes nowadays, right?
Right. Except,
but,
right.
He, But he's noticed that they've gotten longer. I said, you know, it is, people are just home now and they have a lot of time on their hands. So they'll listen to a, you know, longer song than they used to. And I think it's just, maybe it's just the environment that we're in. I think that music is really dictated by the environment that you consume it in. I remember there was a really interesting lecture I heard like 20 years ago, and it always stuck with me because this guy was lecturing about hip hop music and saying how, for example, music from the West Coast and the South had a lot of bass in it because people listened to music in their cars in those cities. Whereas in New York, it wasn't very bass heavy because people listened to it in their headphones, like on the subway and stuff.
Right.
The way they consumed the music influenced how it was produced and the sound that it had and the bass and all that stuff. So I think it's kind of interesting. Now we're in this time where we're just always at home and we're just listening to stuff and watching stuff. And I mean, I know my wife and we binge like Umbrella Academy on Netflix. So
love that show.
Yeah, it's a great show. We went through it really, really quickly. And I think people are just looking for, they have a little bit more patience to like listen to stuff, as you know, before they just didn't have a whole lot of time. So because they're running around.
Yeah. So when you say the songs are longer, how much longer? What are we talking? 4 or 5 minutes? I mean,
that's what I think, what he mentioned to me. Yeah. Like the productions are just a little bit like, there's a little bit more build up and, you know, certain, you know, back in like a couple of years ago, it was like, you just write into the song, right? There wasn't a whole lot of build up. But I think that could be part of it, is like people are just having a little bit more, things are slowed down a little bit more now.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point. So let's change this up a little bit. Why don't you tell my audience a little bit about yourself? Maybe something that a lot of people may not know.
Okay, let's see. A couple things. I mean, I love to draw. I took a bunch of art classes. I love to draw. I love to draw kind of like comics. I love Tales from the Crypt, you know, kind of horror comics.
Okay.
I was also a contestant on Jeopardy.
All right.
Yeah, my episode aired on in September of last year, back when Alex Trebek was still alive, and I didn't win, but I did okay. But the guy I was up against was just really good, so I can't be mad at it. You know, the guy he beat me fair and square. So that was something. And
Wow. That's really cool, man. That you had an opportunity to be on Jeopardy before Alex Trebek passed away. You know, just to be able to be on the show is one thing, but then to meet a legend like Alex Trebek, it's really cool, man. Really cool. So what are you up to these days? What's your win report, I call it? What's important now to you? What are you working on, man?
Well, I mean, just trying to keep on building the law practice. You know, like I said, still working with Janet, still loving that. I love working with new up and coming clients. I have a few potential clients I'm talking to these days, and just trying to build and keep on going. And just on a personal level, I have a daughter. She just turned 10 months old, and she's already walking all over the place.
Oh, well, that's it. You don't have time for anything else.
There you go. So she's walking everywhere, and so we're just trying to keep up with her, and you know, trying to get a house, but this market's crazy right now, so we have to kind of see what happens. Southern California real estate market is out of control at the moment, so we'll have to wait on that for a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I hear you. Tell my audience, man, how can they get in touch with you and get a copy of your book?
Sure. Yeah. You can go. It's on Amazon. So if you search for The Straightforward Guide to the Music Biz, that's me. Or look up my name, Kamal Moo, K-A-M-A-L. And last name is Moo, M-O-O. You can find it on there. Also, I have a website, an author website, KamalAndrew.com. That's K-A-M-A-L-A-N-D-R-E-W.com. And yeah, all my stuff is on there, my social media and things like that. Plus, if you just Google me, a bunch of stuff pops up anyway. You know, I've done a lot of lecturing. I actually teach the music publishing class at my old law school. I'm doing it right now this semester. So I have a strong presence online, I guess. So it should be easy to find me.
Cool. Well, Kamal, I'm not going to keep you forever, man. I know you got a little one at home to get to. Thank you so much for joining the Destroy Podcast, where we're helping creatives conquer the barrier between them and the people. And look, everyone out there, please go and pick up Kamal Moo's book, The Straightforward Guide to the Music Biz. An entertainment lawyer breaks down the industry. Kamal, thank you so much, man, for helping us destroy.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Destroy. The podcast helping entrepreneurs and creators conquer the barriers between them and the people.